Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Chris Rossini, our co-host. Chris, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Great to be with you, Dr. Paul.
Very good. We're going to talk a little bit today about the wonderful arrangements we have made for unemployment. Everybody's working, or are they? It turns out that there's a lot of people that are unemployed. They're not in productive work. They're either on the dole, receiving benefits, and yet there's a lot of people looking for workers. There's a worker shortage. If you want to talk about a mixed up economy since lockdown, it has to be today. It doesn't mean that there's more suffering than ever, but a mixed up economy, there are more and more people suffering, because when you look at the real unemployment rate, and that is the labor participation rate, that keeps going down, less people really involved. But the people who aren't looking for work, they aren't considered unemployed. So there's a lot of different reasons for this, but Chris, I think we probably have figured this out, because the president is even concerned about this, because he says there's a lot of jobs out there and people aren't talking about it. But it's not complex. Why do you make it so difficult? I, the president of the United States, I know what to do. And his simple solution is the solution that both parties use, but especially the Democrats use. Well, there's probably not enough money spent on it. So therefore, sometimes it's government money, sometimes it's business money that the government gives the businessman. So I think that's what he was suggesting, that there would be no problems getting people to work if you just would pay a decent wage. You business people won't pay enough. Well, I think it's a little more complex than that. Chris, what do you have to say about this little problem?
Well, Dr. Paul, you really captured it by saying everything is mixed up, because that is the truth. First, government recklessly forced people out of work, forced them to stay home, businesses to close with lockdowns, which was wrong to do. Then, with money that they do not have, but that the Fed prints, they just flooded everybody with money, handing out money to everyone. Even people overseas were getting money. And now people are not returning to work. Even, as you said, we have record job openings. And Biden, as you pointed out, he's flipping the script. He's blaming the businessman to just pay people more. So they're just supposed to overpay people for jobs that are not worth more money. I mean, that's terrible advice, but one you would expect from a politician. I mean, after all, they'll pay 40 tens of thousands for a hammer and billions of dollars for an Obamacare website. What do they care? They'll just tax people more, print more money. But in the real world, we don't overpay over here. You know, when we buy a house, I don't go to them and take their ask and say, I'll double it. Or if I pay my grocery bill, it's $100, I don't hand them $200 just for the heck of it. So of course, everything is mixed up. Politicians are acting like politicians. And if they really want people to go back to work, stop paying them for not working.
You know, we all try to figure out, why do they do it? And what a mess we have. Whose fault is it? Is it our professors in economics that teaches the wrong thing, which is true? But what really is the reason? Who seems to be winning? Well, I've come around to the opinion that, although this has been known for a long time, more so than ever, with lockdown and with the economic mess and all this chaos, I've come to the conclusion that the biggest issue is the goal of the cultural Marxists, and that is chaos. Because when there is chaos, they have to resort to go to the government and demand the government. And the more chaos, for instance, this whole system of where the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer and there are more street people, is being used as a tool to promote Marxism and socialism and fascism and corporatism and more spending. And you say, well, we have to reverse this. We have to reverse it. But no, that's their goal. Because unfortunately, one of the goals of the Marxists is to tear everything down, because they have come to the conclusion, if you don't tear it down, you can't get rid of it completely. So you can't rebuild with a total Marxist society unless you really destroy everything. And I guess they'll say, well, that's why Marxism didn't really last when they had their chance in the 19th and the 20th century. And it finally, collapses. But right now, the Fed is doing things. I think there's a mixed opinion. Even some libertarians come up and say, well, there's not going to be any inflation. We have to worry about deflation is the problem. And they're talking about some price statistics showing a CPI that might be wrecked and it's going down and other prices going down. And I think that is a misunderstanding of what's going on, because I think people have to really, really always concentrate on what the Fed's doing, and they're creating $120 billion of new money every month, and that's steady. QE's been around for 10 years. And some people say, yes, but the people aren't spending the money, the people aren't doing what they're supposed to do, and they fail to understand that there is a subject called malinvestment. The money doesn't always go where the planners think it should go. Matter of fact, nobody knows where it's going to go, even in a free society. And that's why you have to have an indicator, a major indicator, like profits and losses, and what is the rate of interest. Well, when interest rates are zero and people always are getting bailed out and unemployment's no signal that maybe there's something wrong, because we just pump the money to the people who are unemployed. And there's been a very, very intellectual calculation. You didn't even need a computer. A lot of people say, why should I go back if I'm making $15 an hour right now? And even if I could make a little more with my government job and make $17, that means I'm only getting paid $2 an hour more for it. So they've made that calculation. So we pay people not to work, and if you subsidize something, you get more of it. So I don't think Biden ever got around to reading that part of Austrian economics, because he says, oh, that's way too complicated. All we have to do is bug the businessman. We bugged him enough. We got the rate established by government at $15 an hour and disregarded productivity and all the other things that would go into a market. So he said to the businessman, you pay more money and they'll come to work. Well, it might be that the only incentive for going back to work, because they probably liked their bosses much better when they were just staying at home. So I don't even know if they'd go back to work if you doubled their salaries, because it's too much trouble for them. But anyway, they don't understand that governments cannot predict and guide. It's one thing that not many people talk about, and some people, and I think it's very important, and it's called the propensity to save or spend, or the velocity of money. Just think, if people are worried, and everybody has seen this, when there's a crisis of any sort, like the government lockdown or a hurricane, people rush, to buy stuff. And that means the money gets circulated much faster. If a person, sells something in the morning, he spends it in the afternoon, and everybody's using the money twice in one day instead of once, that's a tremendous increase in monetary power. And that is important, but that is a subjective thing. People, right now, there's some people the government's annoyed with because they want to save money. And that was the whole problem with the Depression. There was still a remnant thinking about a gold standard, and people wouldn't be spending the money. That's why people were buying gold, and they didn't want them to. They want them to spend the gold. So what they do, they took the gold away from the American people. That's how ridiculous government planning is, instead of looking at this as just being an understanding of how free people and free markets operate.
Very good, Dr. Paul. And you made a great point about the philosophy of destruction. This is not something that is new. You could go back to the French Revolution, the Bolsheviks, what happened in Europe and in Asia. This philosophy of destruction is they're going to build a utopia on top of it. But what happens is they destroy and it stays destroyed. And you have mass starvation, and nothing is built on top of the destruction until freedom and the desire for it returns. The next point I want to make along the jobs topic is, yes, they're paying people not to work. There's record job openings. And now the Biden administration wants to spend another $1 trillion that they do not have, with a claim that they're going to create millions of American jobs. It's amazing. This whole story is absolutely amazing. And all it is special interests to get these trillions of dollars. That's why you have so much buzz around Washington. Everybody wants a piece of the pie. You know, why satisfy customers and people in the marketplace when you can just satisfy politics and politicians and get that juicy government contract? So that's what it's all about. And what everyone is supposed to ignore after the headlines of, oh, they're going to spend $1 trillion, is what could have been done with the money. That's, you know, that's the unseen. Nobody asks me what my portion is. I don't want them to do what they're going to do with this money, or someone else. They may invest in their business. They may get a medical procedure that they now will not be able to get. But that's all unseen. That's all ignored. You're just supposed to concentrate on the headline, on what government is doing with that $1 trillion that they do not have. So we don't have free markets. We don't have capitalism. This is cronyism, corporatism, and massive, massive government intervention.
I think so often they look at the wrong numbers and the wrong thing, because we do have an employment problem, an unemployment problem, but because the people who are in the workforce, the unemployed, that number is actually going up. And right now there are 7.6 million less jobs in this country than there were before the lockdown. So that hasn't been adjusted. But that's not like, you know, if that would be the case and it was the government had really messed up the economy bad enough to cause that unemployment, people wouldn't be demanding they get to stay at home. You know, some of the unions and all, you know, we don't want to go back to work. It's too dangerous. You know, when they were talking about the union teachers. So it causes people to do the wrong thing. And I think the bottom line of this is productivity. I think our productivity has to go down under these circumstances because of the disruption in the labor forces, the plans, the measurement, and the indicator of interest rates, and all the statistics on unemployment. They're not reliable either because they don't sound so bad. They'll say, oh, the unemployment rate is 5.6, 6.2, this sort of thing. And I say, well, it's not so bad because they're not complaining. But they're also getting tremendous benefits, so they are relying on debt. And so far, it is true that the debt, as bad as it is, and what it's leading to is a total disaster, it's still been tolerated to a large degree. And this will end because they can't do it because of the productivity. So what do? We keep printing more money. Like Chris, you mentioned another $1 trillion. We have to do this and pump up the economy. And with that type of a welfare state and a lower productivity, how can the people buy stuff? Well, we'll print dollars, and we've been doing that subtly. That we've been getting away to some degree, and gradually getting much worse ever since World War II, because we had the reserve currency status. But that has, really unwound since 1971. So what happens under those circumstances? If our productivity and quality of what we produce goes down, they'll buy overseas, and then the American people might make a choice because they're getting a product that they see, they want, and they'll pay for, and they send money to China. Then what happens then? The politicians, Republicans and Democrats, get hysterical about the Chinese are coming, they're buying up our stuff, they're buying up our land, they're investing in precious metals and all these other things that, yes, because they had the money. So one problem leads to another, and that's why, Chris, we so often and consistently have always argued the case that the answer to these problems will not be more government. First, do no harm. So keep the government out of it and talk about how do we release creative energy by getting government out of the way, by providing property rights, ownership of property and contract rights, and also maybe even consider a sound currency. And those aren't brand new ideas. The founders understood this rather well, tried to write it into the law, but human nature is such that people are, you know, usually tempted to get a free ride. And right now the free ride is out there, and if they need a little bit more, President says another $1 trillion. Doesn't all this money is never even appropriated by the Congress or anything. It's all outside of it because the Fed just creates it and sends it all around. And then when the people they allot that money to, like the big banks and the big corporations, they get worried because, there's still problems out there, and some people won't go back to work. So the businessman hasn't raised the wages enough. So it's dependency, you know, on government planning and regulation of the economy through the Federal Reserve, and it's doomed to fail, and that's what is happening right now. We are living in a bankrupt country, in a bankrupt world, financially and morally, and that cannot persist forever. Matter of fact, we're seeing it breaking down right now, and it was magnified by the unnecessary lockdown with COVID-19.
Very good, Dr. Paul, and that's a perfect segue to my concluding thoughts here. We have a bad anti-American habit that needs to be broken, and it's actually worse than a habit now. You know, maybe in the early 1900s it started with a habit. Today, 100 years later, it's a bad addiction, and that addiction is to the fixation on the question, what should the government do? What should the government do? Every little piece of minutia that happens anywhere, that's the first question that's on everyone's mind. And the government, you know, people get mad when the government doesn't do anything. Oh, the president doesn't care. He's out golfing. They get mad if he doesn't get involved in every little thing. Yeah, let him golf. Let him golf for 4 years. Let him go around the world, shake hands. We'll be all right. We'll actually be better off. Do nothing. That's, you know, that was the American spirit at first. And it has just totally been flipped on its head. And in our country specifically, it's not just here. It's not just what happens in America. It's if anything happens in the world, what will the American government do? And they've made a total mess of so many countries. We talked about the destruction, the destructive ideas that dominate. They've destroyed one country after another, rebuilt nothing. The idea was totally flawed from the beginning, but it's this habit. What should the government do? And what we need is a new old habit, which was the original American habit. It's when you have a problem, what should I do is the first question. What should my family, my friends, what should we do? Members of my community or church, what can people voluntarily do to solve problems? And there will be a lot less, never a perfect world, like some people think they're going to create, but a lot less problems that will affect everyone versus like what we have today on what should the government do.
Very, very good, Chris. I want to close with shifting gears a little bit because it's not all impossible to deal with. I think there's signs of some optimism, and that's what we have to look to because that's what we want to encourage. First thing I try to get people to understand is how these cycles work. When the Depression came, you know, of course, it was all Hoover's fault. Unfortunately, that is not exactly true. Hoover contributed to it, and Roosevelt made it much worse. But Roosevelt in 1932 ran on a pretty good platform. He says, we have to maintain the gold standard. We have to live within our means, and on and on. And he certainly wasn't promoting a warmongered foreign policy, even though we ended up with more war. So, but the universities were full. They had been filled up in the 20s with the progressive professors because the progressive era started at the beginning of the 20th century, not late. And so the universities were full. And they talked about socialism, they tried that, but we ended up with corporatism and interventionism and deficit finding, undermine the, you know, the monetary system. All those things occurred. That's what they really believed in, even though they never knew about it. Today, what I'm keeping my fingers crossed for is that the universities are not full of individuals that believe in free markets and sound money, but there's people out there. There is a remnant. There is a remnant of people who not only have heard of free markets and understanding of freedom, but they are involved and participating. When you think of what the Mises Institute has done with the whole idea of Austrian economics, I think it's fantastic. Nobody knows how many people are out there like that. I was encouraged when I campaigned on a national scale how many people did know, and they were in the universities. But right now, of course, we have had this vicious attack on freedom of speech, so people have not been as noisy, but it's out there. There is a source of people. People do know about it, and I always believe that people hang on to the truth, the spiritual truth, as well as the economic truth, and the economic truth, and all that we hold dear. So I'm optimistic that this will eventually come about, because what we try to do is encourage people to look in to this philosophy of liberty. Join in one way or the other. You don't even have to join a group. You can do it as an individual and promote the cause of individualism. And you can do that as an individual or a group. I've had so many people who had gone to rallies and knew about our campaigns had started their own group. I can't even keep up with them. They're out there, so there's a sentiment. But right now, all we hear about is lockdowns and all the horrible things going on, which I think is necessary. We have to know what it is, but we have to be able to interpret it, because if you want to live in a free society, that's completely different than what we're seeing, what seems to be controlling us totally and completely. And nobody knows exactly how this will transpire or when and how, but I do know that the ideas have to be there first before you have a change in attitude. Because eventually, it's the attitude of the people that will determine the type of government we have. It was the attitude of the Russian and Soviet people that finally tore down the Berlin Wall. It wasn't armies and tanks or whatever. People just had it. It was an idea that had failed, and they had to look to something else. And that what we're up against now is a totally failed philosophy of big government. It's a type of socialism. It's named by cultural Marxism, but it will end. And we want to just welcome people into the movement, which is a freedom movement, to look for the answers to the problems that we have today. They're out there, and we should find out where it is and what we as individuals can do about it. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.